All right, guys, welcome to the line. This, once again, this is Ryan McGinn with MuscleGainingExperts.com, and tonight I got a marathon-type call with Jed Johnson of the Diesel Crew, and Joe Hashi will be joining us a little later on through the call. But Jed played basketball, baseball at Towanda High School in Pennsylvania, played Division II baseball for 2 years at Mansfield University before taking on his strength and training as his main interest. Jed is a certified strength and conditioning specialist through the NSCA, National Strength and Conditioning Association, is a regular speaker and presenter at the Pennsylvania State Strength and Conditioning Clinic. Along with that, he is also co-founder of the Diesel Crew and competes regularly in strongman contests and grip contests all over the country. Jed, if I forgot anything, go ahead and feel free to add that in there.
No, man, you pretty much covered everything. I'll tell you, I really appreciate having the chance to speak with you tonight. It's a real pleasure to be talking with the man with the best hairdo in the strength and conditioning industry. So thanks a lot, man. Now, I do have to warn you, though, bro. I watch a lot of wrestling, watch a lot of wrestling interviews. I've been tuning into a lot of Iron Sheik shoe interviews on YouTube lately. So my interview skills may be a little crazy from time to time just because of the influence I've been around. So you'll have to deal with me a little bit.
Oh, I can handle that, man. That makes for a good interview. So.
Okay, all right. Well, just as long as you're open to that, then that sounds just dandy.
Well, hopefully when Joe gets online, you don't tear into him too bad. He's kind of a quiet guy, so
yeah.
You don't want to get him all riled up. But let's go and get it started. Tell us a little bit about how did you get started in lifting, and basically how did you take it to the level where you're a member, co-founder of the Diesel Crew, and with Smitty and everything. We had Smitty on here last week, so people are familiar with him.
Yeah, man, I tuned in for part of that. That sounded great.
Yeah, kind of give us a little background there, how that came to be and how you guys met.
Yeah, sure. I started lifting when I was young, just from watching wrestling and, Hulk Hogan, Ultimate Warrior, stuff like that. I do a lot of push-ups and stuff when I watched. And then I got older and then got, like, a Nintendo and stuff like that, and I kind of got lazy. So I kind of gave it up for, like, 6 years. And then I went to college to play baseball at Mansfield, like you mentioned, and just hooked up with a couple dudes that were pretty serious about lifting. I mean, serious for the knowledge that we had, because, I would never train the way we used to train back then. I think we used to do chest, like, 2 or 3 times a week, that kind of stuff, the stuff that I would never even dream about doing now. But I kind of just got interested in it. And then eventually ended up getting some injuries, pulled a groin that took about 2 years to heal. And after I pulled the groin, then I had no lower body. So I was a pitcher in college, and since I had no lower body, I had to generate all kinds of power with my upper body, and eventually ended up wearing my arm out to the point that I couldn't even, if I was in class at college, I couldn't even put my hand or my elbow on the desk and then rest my head on my hand because there was so much pain in my elbow. So I ended up giving up baseball, and because I took on such a love of lifting with those guys on the baseball team there, I ended up saying, you know what, I'm going to get into this. I'm going to do bodybuilding and do stuff like that. And about, a few months into that, I met up with Smitty at a rehab center at the local chiropractor, and he was doing stuff that was just crazy compared to what I was doing at Mansfield with the bodybuilding crew from the baseball team, and really enjoyed all that. It was quite challenging. I mean, we got into using bands and surgical tubing and chains and drop sets and stuff like that, and it was pretty cool. So I really liked it. So ever since then, I stuck with it. I think that was the summer of 99, and then been hitting it hard ever since. And loving every minute of it, man. My best time is always in the weight room. So even a bad day in the weight room is better than, like, a good day at work. You know what I mean?
I completely agree on that one. Everything kind of seems to be okay when you're lifting weights. Nothing really matters on the outside world.
Yeah. Yeah.
How did you go into you and Smitty and even Joe himself? You guys kind of have the odd training style. You guys do a lot of the off-the-wall stuff, a lot of the grip training. When did you get the interest for that, and how did that spring about?
I found out about grip training on the internet on the Dr. Squat forum, which I'm pretty sure is still up. I haven't been on there in years, but there was a dude named.
Actually.
Is it? Well,
yeah,
I should check it out sometime and see if any of those dudes are still there. It used to be there. There's some pretty knowledgeable guys there, but Rick Walker was talking about tearing cards and closing these grippers and, you know, picking up these different combinations of plates. And I was like, at first I thought, why in the hell would anyone want to train just their hands? You know what I mean? That didn't make any sense to me, and it seemed like a waste of your time to train like 5% of your body mass. But then I was like, you know what? I'm going to tear a deck of cards. I'm going to figure out how to do this. So I bought a deck of cards from the store, and then it took me a couple weeks in order to tear it. Like, I would squeeze and tear and yank as hard as I could, and I finally cracked it after like an hour. And then over the course of a couple weeks, I'd just grab it and tear at it every so often. And then finally I tore it the whole way. And then from then on, I just been hooked on doing grip and strongman feats and things like that. So if it hadn't been for the internet or hadn't been for finding Rick Walker on the website, I don't know if I'd ever gotten into it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and you're into all, like, you regularly compete in strongman and grip contests. And
dude, I haven't. Well. Yeah, the truth is I haven't been to a strongman in a while, but because I've been focusing all my energy on the grip stuff. I generally travel to at least 3 or 4 contests a year. That are outside of Pennsylvania. I mean, I go all over the place. I'm pretty sure I travel more than anybody in the U.S. anyway. I've been to Texas, been to Minnesota, been to Ohio. I drive places. I've driven 14 hours to Illinois twice. I just love it. It's cool. The dudes that do it are cool. I get along with everybody, and I happen to be pretty good at it. So I was blessed with big hands, and I'm putting it to good use, I guess. It's a lot of fun.
And you have a killer double overhand deadlift from.
Well, you know what? So do you, brother. You shouldn't hold yourself back or anything. You got a pretty good one yourself. But I'm always trying to improve because we have world records now. We have American records, world records. We have standardized equipment and things like this, and you know it's still a small underground sport, but you know it's pretty legit. Like,
yeah,
you know, there's not standardized stuff, and you know some of the stuff that is in strongman isn't standardized. You know what I mean? And then the equipment that we use in grip is standardized. Like, you're using the same equipment or very very close to the same equipment every time, so you can compare over the years and over the different contests, the performances, and you're able to know how you compare to this guy or that guy, you know?
Mm-hmm. I actually did an interview with Mike Mullen and Andrew Dernier. It's not on the site because he wanted me to keep that one private. But,
right.
And he was kind of the same way. He's real passionate about grip, and I think he's competed with you a couple times.
Dernier's a freak, man. He owns the U.S. record. I heard there was talk that someone else took the world record. I can't confirm that for sure, but, I mean, Derniat's hands are ridiculous. He is strong.
I have, like, the smallest hands, and it seems like, as a man, but I just have, like, a good crushing grip. But I can't close a gripper to save my life, so that's the funny thing. Like, I can overhand deadlift, like, I don't know, upwards of, like, 300 pounds, but I can't close a gripper to save my life. I think it's hilarious.
Well, one thing to keep in mind with grip is some things are highly dependent on technique, and then some things you can get away with just brute strength. You know, the axle and double overhand deadlift and things like that, that's a brute strength kind of deal. So if you've just got the sheer hand strength to pull the bar off the floor, you can do well against anybody. However, with the grippers, there's a great deal of technique involved there. That's very similar to, say, the clean and jerk. You know, you have people that weigh 148 pounds doing upwards of 300 pounds in the clean and jerk because they know how to maximize their leverage and use good form and technique. Whereas, you know, I can't do that much weight, and I'm, you know, 270 pounds. So, you know, the technique is very important with grippers, and if you don't know the techniques, then it's holding you back. So that's one of the things.
Well, you're pretty big, you know, being with the Diesel Crew, and you guys actually have your own product about homemade strength equipment.
Right.
Tell us a little bit about why you prefer training in a garage as opposed to a commercial gym, and what benefits do you see out of that?
Yeah, you know, dude, commercial gyms, man, are so hit and miss. You don't know what you're walking into. There was a good one in town here for years. You know, you could take chalk in there, get the chalk all over the place. They didn't even bat an eye. You could drop weights. You could drop the bars and stuff from overhead. They didn't say anything. And then you go to another gym that, you know, you can't take the chalk in there. I mean, we got kicked out one time. Smitty and I got kicked out of a gym in Binghamton, New York, Johnson City, I guess it was, because we were tearing decks of cards. I mean, we took chalk in with us, but then they took that away, and then they were like, okay, you guys can lift, just no chalk. And then 10 minutes later, we get kicked out anyway because we were tearing decks of cards. Smitty was actually trying to tear three decks of playing cards on top of one another all at the same time, and I think he would have gotten it because he already had a crack going in the cards, and then the owner kicked us out. So I guess the point I'm trying to make is you never know what the factors, what the rules are going to be at a gym, and you have complete control over those factors in your own home or in your garage or out in your lawn or whatever the case may be. So, I totally encourage people to just, you know, put some money away, get your weights, get a bar, and just start, and then make your own stuff, you know. And you can have your own collection of perfectly good equipment that you can get great results from. You'd be strong, you'll be a monster, and you don't have to worry about being quiet or wiping your sweat up off a bench or having to keep track of your chalk. You can do whatever the hell you want to at your own place.
Yeah, I actually, you know, speaking of getting kicked out, like, I never really talked about it too much, but I started training at a local Bally's that was right down the street from my house. I used to ride my bike there.
Right.
And I was starting to, I'll never forget, the first time I was a little turned off of the whole gym scene was when they only had dumbbells to 80. When I first started, I was like, oh, man, you got to be really strong to do the 80s.
Yeah.
And then I remember, I'll never forget today, about 6-8 months later, I got to the point where I was doing 80s,
mm-hmm.
and they're like, well, just use the barbell. And I was like, well, what if I want to do dumbbells?
Right.
They're like, well, nobody's that strong, so you just got to make do. And then I just kept working out there, and then I'm a big deadlifter, and I love the deadlift. So I think I deadlifted 3 days a week for like a year straight.
Huh.
But I got to the point where I was starting to rep out 405, and the first time I got it, it was like I went for two reps and it slipped out of my hands because obviously the bars are slippery. You can't use chalk. And it was just like I dropped it, didn't think anything of it, but I ended up like it like crashed down the whole gym and everybody was all like, oh my God, did somebody just die?
Yeah, they're not used to hearing anything like that, dude.
Yeah, and then I remember this little pencil neck type trainer guy comes up to me and he's like, the owner wants to see you in the office when you leave, before you leave. And I was like, okay, cool. And they had already hated me because I was starting to get into chains, dude. I would lug my own chains in,
mm-hmm.
in a backpack that I bought from Lowe's.
Yeah.
And I would be setting up these chains on bench and just not even really having a clue how to use them. I was just doing it because it looked cool.
Right.
And I'd ride my bike up there like, you know, a mile with that backpack full of chains. And they already thought I was nuts. So he brought me to the office and told me that I was disturbing the members and scaring the clientele and that
wow.
I should never come back. And that was when I started my whole, you know, getting into the whole, you know, starting to figure out a way to make my own equipment. And I was psyched because I didn't have to pay the contract. They let me out of the contract, too. So I was pretty happy about that.
That's good.
But
they shouldn't make you pay if they kick you out.
But it came to the point where I was like, oh, well, now I'm like, wow, I don't really have a lot of extra money. What am I going to do? But, you know, starting off there, what would you recommend people get that are just, you know, going to start building their own place? What are the basics that you would recommend to somebody?
I mean, I don't think you can go wrong with just getting a 300-pound weight set from, like, Walmart or something, or Dick's or someplace like that, and get that. I think that's a necessity. But then after that, I mean, I would start going for the odd objects. I would start with, drawing a blank here. A sandbag, sorry. A sandbag, just getting like an army duffel bag off eBay. I think they're like $10. And then you fill that thing up with feed bags filled up with sand. And then you've got, I mean, and you can adjust it, and you've got a great piece of equipment there. And you'll be rugged. You know, you'll be a strong dude. And that stuff is not going to take up that much room. You can leave that in the corner somewhere or in a closet or something like that. Sandbag is definitely on the list for building your own repertoire of equipment. So I would start there.
So basically 300-pound set and a sandbag, and you'll probably run out of weight pretty quick with just a basic 300-pound set.
Yeah, and after that, then you get yourself some chains. get yourself, you know, go knock a tree down in the woods and lift that up. I mean, you know, stones. I'm just joking about the tree, but I mean, you can get natural stones around. You know, I don't know how it's like in Florida, but I know up here in Pennsylvania, there's cricks everywhere. You know what a crick is?
Yeah.
I think you guys might say creek.
Yeah, we don't say crick. We say creek.
Yeah. Well, let's call it a stream for right now. You can go dig a good stone out of the stream. That's gonna put the pounds on you, lifting stones, carrying them around, walking them. Not everything has to be like picking things up off the ground or laying down on a bench and pressing them. You know, it doesn't have to be like that. You can go out there in nature and you can find yourself a big old stone that's gonna be good for you for lifting and building some serious strength.
And there's something about that, like the odd object type lifting. It's hard to explain what it does to you as a person, but it's, you know, when you it's kind of like the implements fight back. You know, they don't it's not easy. Like a deadlift is easy, but you know, lifting an Atlas stone is hard because as you grab that thing, it tends to rip the skin off your forearms. And
right.
You become a different person if you actually stick with it and don't let it beat you. So I don't
know.
Yeah, that's what I was like about it.
Yeah, I still remember the first time I went back to work after training Atlas stones for the first time. And my forearms were all torn up because I didn't know anything about sleeves or tape or anything like that. And people were like, what did you do? Like, they thought I had some kind of accident on a motorcycle or something like that. I don't even own a motorcycle. So, I mean, I was missing skin for a while, but it was a good conversation piece. So that was pretty cool. And you kind of wear it like a badge, you know what I mean? There's no taking that away from you. Those scars are going to be with you for a while.
Definitely. Well, let's get into some of these questions we got here.
All right.
I don't have name. I always forget to put the name for my ask database questions.
Okay.
But first one we got is what is the best movement for someone who can't do a pull up?
Yeah, you know, this is a really good question. I'm glad this came up because when Smitty and I first started training, I couldn't do a pull up to save my life. I think I was like 226 or something. And we didn't do pull-ups on the baseball team. We did, like, lat pull-downs, and it was, like, crappy form, behind the neck, stuff like that. It was just stuff that, you know, you never want to do now. But I really thought about this question, and what I did is a lot of times it was just the partner-assisted pull-ups, and, like, you try to do a pull-up as hard as you can, but if you have a partner there, you know, they're worth their weight in gold. They can assist you for getting that full repetition. And so that's a good way to train the concentric phase, pulling up towards the pull-up bar. The other thing that I was thinking about was kind of like holds for time near the bar and then slowly performing the eccentric part of the phase all the way down to the arms extended point. So, I mean, you could get a stool and position it by your pull-up bar and just kind of step off the stool and try to hold yourself for as long as possible. You can add weight doing that. You could put a weight belt around you and like a dip belt, for instance, and hang a dumbbell off of there. So you could add weight because you're going to be stronger in the eccentric portion anyway. So if you add weight to that, that's gonna help you perform a pull-up. But another thing a lot of people don't think about, and this works really good, if you have any of the giant elastic bands, like jump stretch bands, these things are great. I'm sure you've seen those before, right?
Yeah, we have quite a few of them at Spank Camp, right?
Yeah. So all you need to do is, like, loop one of these bands up around up around the pull-up bar and then loop the band down either under your leg, under your foot, or, like, under a shin or something like that. And what that's going to do is it's kind of going to offset part of your body weight. It's going to deload you. So instead of pulling your full, you know, 200 pounds of body weight, the band might take off 20 pounds of tension. You know, so instead of doing the 200-pound pull-up, you're only doing 180. And what that's going to do is you're going to be able to develop stability in your shoulders. You're going to be able to figure out how you have to apply tension with your lats. You're going to be able to see how hard you have to grip the barbell. And you're going to develop muscle memory through that range of motion. So the bands are real good, too. So
And they also come in they have the different colors, too. So as you progress, I think the biggest one's a blue, then you have a green,
right,
a purple, and then like a mini green.
Right.
a time you're at the purple, and you, if you can do that for, you know, a good amount of reps, usually you can get one or two on your own and then just start working up from there.
Yeah, and again, I mean, pull-ups are great for you. So, I mean, it is a good goal to have to be able to do pull-ups. But there's no rule saying you can't do a cheap pull-up. You know, you can start out doing, like, kip-up pull-ups and just jumping pull-ups and holds for time, you know what I mean? And you're going to feel that accomplishment when the first time that you're able to hit, a set of three pull-ups. And, you know, there's so many ways to do it. Hopefully some of those ideas will help out the people that are wondering how to get that done.
Definitely. And the jump stretch bands, too, are a good thing if you are trying to build a home gym. Those are always a good thing to have.
Oh, yeah, man. Yeah, if you don't have the implements, like if you don't have a series of dumbbells, you only have a couple dumbbells or something like that, you can use the bands for the resistance for sure. You can use them in all different angles and planes, and they're great. They're awesome.
Good stuff. Well, next question we got here is, gentleman asks, how does he repair his back after doing a heavy loaded deadlift? And I'm assuming he means after he works up to heavy deadlifts, his back probably hurts. So.
Oh, okay. So he's fatigued in the lower back.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and this is it's kind of a funny question that this comes up because I've had some back injuries, and I've just lately, in the last like couple months, really been focusing on some restoration techniques, warm up techniques, and post-workout, like stretching techniques and things like that. And I've found that, you know, sometimes when you have some lower back pain, it's just as simple as just doing some stretching right down on the floor after your workout. You know, I'm talking pretty close after your workout because you want the muscles to be warm. They'll respond better to the stretching that way. Sit right down, just do some hurdler stretches, you know, spread right out, spread your legs out, reach down, touch your toes and things like that, and just nice and gentle ease into the stretch. Because I think I think I read, or maybe a chiropractor told me one time, that, you know, most of the injuries that he had seen for the lower back for athletes were related to really tight hamstrings. And pretty much what goes on is, you know, a lot of athletes really don't stretch the way they're supposed to. They get tight in the posterior chain, and those hamstrings are causing them problems with their alignment, with their lower back, and things like that. And sometimes you can just remedy that with stretching. I learned that 15 years ago and just started applying it here the last few months. So that's the first thing I would suggest. And another thing that has worked great for me for my hand strength is contrast bathing. So if there's any way that this person that put in this question could try contrast bathing, I think it would help them out quite a bit. And what I'm talking about with this contrast bathing is kind of submerging the area in a warm water or to hot, even up to hot water, and then going immediately to cold water. And unless you have, you know, like a pool or some kind of a therapy pool or something like that, that might be tough to do, but you could do it in the shower. You could do it in the shower, just spray the warm water right onto your lower back for, you know, 20 seconds, then cycle back and forth between, like, chilled water, you know, pretty cold water, and then pretty warm water. And I've done that for my hands, my forearms, elbows, sore biceps and shoulders. I used to do this back in college when I was pitching, these contrast baths. I first learned about this at a baseball clinic, actually. So I've had pretty good results for that. So I think those two things right there is going to help somebody out with a sore back.
Yeah, one of those things is that you see is nobody really decides to fix anything until it's broken.
Yep.
A little bit of preventative foam rolling and some stretches beforehand. I know I'm guilty of it. I don't do it near as much as I should.
Yeah.
But first thing is when you get hurt, you're like, oh, God, I got to fix this now.
Yeah.
And that's usually too late.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm really trying to go about it with a more preventive approach. I used to keep the foam roller upstairs in the living room so that I could hit it, you know, during commercials and things while I'm watching TV. I mean, do you want to guess how many times I actually did that? like zero, you know what I mean? So I was getting nothing out of that foam roller, so I took that right down to the garage gym that I built. And I do that before each workout now. And I can tell you that my back feels better, and also my workouts have improved in that I just feel more fluid. You know, Smitty used to say that I walk around town like Frankenstein because I'm so stiff. And, you know, if you look at videos and stuff, I'm like, I can barely walk. It looks like I'm, you know, have like a board stuck up my butt or something like that, you know. So, and I feel more fluid now. I spend a lot of time sitting on my butt at work. So I kind of have a sedentary job, so that kind of works against me. But, I'm feeling better lately doing the mobility stuff. And I suggest anybody does that with the foam roller and stretching and dynamic warm-up and things like that.
Yeah, and there's tons of stuff on YouTube, too, for the people listening that, you know, just put in dynamic warm-up or mobility and you'll get
That's a great point. Yeah, that's a great point. There's some garbage on YouTube as well. But there's lot of good stuff, too. If you take a few minutes and search for those things, you'll find some good stuff. And, you know, Smitty has a lot of good videos on his YouTube channel. I really suggest anybody, you know, subscribe to when you find a good video, subscribe to that channel, because YouTube will constantly be feeding you the new content from those people. And generally, when you find somebody with decent content, it's pretty consistently good content.
Yeah, I know Elliot's channel is really good. Same with Smitty. You guys always put out good stuff. I mean, there's so much crap on YouTube. It's hard to feed through the garbage, but
you got to wade through it. Yep. Yeah, for sure.
I'm going to head to the next question here. This person asked, "What is the number one best piece of equipment to build up his overhead pressing strength?" So I assume exercises/equipment. He wants to know like a little program to improve his overhead pressing.
You know, that's a good question. I love overhead stuff. I found that the most important thing for developing overhead is just doing overhead stuff. You know, I'm not sure if it really matters what the piece of equipment is that you're using. I mean, there's good sides to everything, and there's bad sides to everything. So, you know, I think the most important thing is just having time under the bar doing the different techniques. And what I mean by that is doing, you know, military press, which is like, you know, kind of like the more strict press. Also, you know, even push press, jerks, you know, trying to do all that stuff. I think a combination of all those things is good for developing your overhead strength, because it's not just shoulders that are getting that implement up over your head. It doesn't matter if you're pressing a log or an axle or a sandbag or just a normal Olympic bar. It's more than just shoulders. It's really a full body coordinated movement in order to press something overhead. So, you know, the most important thing is just get in the gym and start pressing. Get off the bench, you know, you got to get off the bench and then just stand up and start pressing.
And definitely one thing too that we do a lot with, so I train a lot with Elliot Hulse at strength camp, and we just do tons of volume. I mean, it's probably not the greatest for shoulder pain if you're experiencing that, but I mean, take a lighter weight and then just do a lot of sets. That's a really good way that, I mean, I've brought out my overhead press, and I mean, pretty much it works for pretty much everything. You know, deadlift, most people think they have to complicate things so much, but really if you just went in and did an hour straight of nothing but overhead press, I think you'll be feeling pretty rough the next day.
Yeah, you'll be feeling rough, and you'll be rugged, you know.
Yep.
You know, you're going to be, you might not get as beefy and cut up as a bodybuilder that's, you know, all inflated, but you're going to be stronger, you're going to be more athletic, you know, and you're going to be more rugged. You're going to be a tough son of a gun. Yeah.
I think Charles Staley had the EDT type training.
Yeah.
Pick two exercises for 20 minutes and just kill the exercises.
Yep. Smitty and I did that for, you know, I don't know, it's been years. But, I mean, those are good workouts. Those are good, challenging workouts, man. You know, you said something very, very point on a second ago. People try to make their workouts too complicated. I mean, sometimes it's just about getting in there and just working your ass off, you know?
Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things too. I mean, being with garage gym equipment, you know, and you know, warehouse type gyms that you basically you make your own equipment yourself, and it's you don't really have that much equipment, so your choices are limited. So it's like you may want to do a you know, dumbbell overhead pressing, but well, all I got is one barbell, so I guess I'm just going to do barbell presses today.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So,
yep.
And I think people take that for granted that they need to do all this extra stuff, and they really don't.
Yeah. I mean, there's a way to modify. I mean, you can modify. If all you have a bar is a bar, you can modify that really easily and make it into an axle with just a nice, long, thick piece of PVC pipe. Or if you can get, I know where I work, they have hard, like, compacted cardboard cores for, like, mm-hmm. rolls of plastic. And you can slip those. You can slip these pipes and stuff right over a bar, and instantly you have, like, a 3-inch axle. It's you just got to make sure that this pipe that you're putting over the bar is going to be big enough to pass over those collars that are on the bar. But that's, mm-hmm. that makes an awesome implement. Smitty and I trained on a cardboard core axle for months and months when we were first getting into strongman competitions.
I bought one. I remember I was all psyched up when I was in one of my old houses I used to live in. We had this small garage, and I had just read Dinosaur Training. That was like the mm-hmm. first book, like Dinosaur Training and Super Squats were the first two training books I ever bought.
Right.
So like I was all about 20 rep squats and 3-inch thick bar bench pressing and overhead pressing.
Yep.
But I remember I bought a hollow cord thick bar for, it had to have been under $100 at the time. It wasn't even that expensive.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can make a lot more stuff with that $100, but it was a good investment. We still have it sitting at same mm-hmm. camp today.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
I did
that kind of stuff
it.
Lasts you forever.
So, I mean, it's definitely good to venture out into the realm of odd objects.
Oh, yeah. Smitty just put up a post last week on dieselcrew.com. And it's all about axle training, and you know we didn't buy an expensive axle. It's just a 2-inch piece of pipe that we got at the scrapyard. So I encourage people to check that out on the site. You'll get a lot of good hard work out of an axle.
Definitely. Next question kind of goes right into kind of what we're talking about now. It's is there any equipment that one could build that could be used in an apartment without a lot of space? And what are your recommendations for a fairly decent pulling sled?
So he wants to know about equipment that'll fit in a small apartment.
Yep.
Probably doesn't have a lot of room. Maybe he's a college kid or something like that.
That sounds about right.
Yeah.
Could be a studio.
Yeah. The first thing that comes to mind if you're limited on equipment is again that sandbag, because you can make yourself a sandbag or two, and you'll be able to do rows, overhead press, cleans, clean and press, you know, squats, back squats, front squats, searcher squats, bear hug squats. I mean, the possibilities are endless with a sandbag. And if you've got limited space, if you don't have a sandbag, then you're making a mistake. You need to get yourself a sandbag. And again, it's as simple as getting on the internet, getting on eBay, look for a surplus army duffel bag, and just fill that up with some feed bags that are filled up with dirt or sand or pea gravel or something like that, and you've got yourself a sturdy sandbag right there that's going to last you forever.
Yeah, we have quite a few of them at strength camp. We decided not to make them all adjustable. We just kind of made a 50-pounder and wrote 50 on it, made a 100-pounder.
Yeah.
And I've had better – I don't know about you. I've had better luck with actually the army duffel bags. I know Josh Hankin makes some specific sandbag. You know, if you look at sandbag training, I think he comes up number one. But we've had handles rip off of those, and they weren't that great. So we.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. We just got a bad batch, and me and Elliot spent some money on that stuff. And
yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure I've ever trained with one of those bags. I know Smitty has one. He uses them with his athlete Mike, mm-hmm. but I don't know. I'm not sure. I know those army duffel bags, man. They're made to take a beating because those servicemen, you know, God bless them, are out there and you know they got to carry that stuff around. It's got to last. So I mean, the stitches mm-hmm. are always tough. The material, you know, is very very strong. You can drop it. You know, I mean, we've taken our sandbag and put it through hell, throwing it around. You know, it's landing on rocks. You know, we're dropping it, and the thing never breaks. The feed bags inside are going to break and allow sand to kind of like pop out before
yep.
the sand, you know, the outer duffel bag is going to pop itself.
Yeah, I think we ended up taking the Henkin back and putting him inside the Army duffel bags.
Oh, yeah, well, there you go.
I'm probably not the greatest testimonial for Josh Henkin sandbag, but, you know, most of what I tell people is honest, so.
Right, yeah.
What about a pulling side? You just recommend
the
tire?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we actually shot that. It's so easy to make yourself a sled. That's in our homemade strength DVD. And, you know, all we did was just take a tire and we just put a hole in it and connected like an eye bolt to it. And then, boom, there's your sled. In most cases, your plates are going to fit right on top of the tire. You know, you don't want to use a gigantic tire. That's going to, you know, that's not going to hold your plates on top of it very well. But most car tires are going to be perfect. And Joe makes a real good point in our homemade strength DVD because he works in a, or I'm sorry, he lives in a neighborhood where there's people like right next door. So if he takes his metal sled out in the driveway and pulls it along the driveway, it's going to make a lot of noise and it's going to irritate the neighbors. And but the tire is like silent. You know, you can't even hear it getting pulled around. So that's another way to go. If you live in kind of a, you know, I know a lot of people live in cities. I live out here in the country, man. Like, I don't even get cell service where I live. So I can be out in the lawn making all the noise that I want to, and nobody hears me. But I know a lot of people that live in the complexes in the city and stuff like that, they don't have that freedom to make a lot of noise. So that's another thing to consider. If you live on campus at a school or something like that, and your funds are limited, because I know mine were, you know, I know what it's like to not have any money at college. You know, you can find a tire. Next time you get your tires changed, keep one of them, and you got a sled, no problem. Just connect a rope to it or some kind of chains or an attachment of some sort, and then you can pull that around and just drag that till your heart's content.
Yeah, we use a lot of actually old wheel and tires.
Okay.
The actual rim inside of it, and then
yep.
I mean we put chain around it, so the chain does make noise dragging on the ground. But with the rim in there, you can take your sandbags that you made, stack them on top, and make it as heavy or as light as you want it to be.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So that was one. I guess that's not the greatest way, because eventually you have to take the. You're gonna wear it through the chain, but I mean,
yeah.
If you're dragging your sled enough that you start wearing through the chain, you're gonna be in pretty good shape, and I'm sure you're gonna want to keep dragging that sled, so the chain's not gonna bother you.
Right. You know, the other option is if you have access to scrap metal and you want to make yourself a real nice sled, you could make yourself a prowler. You know, you can kind of use a prowler for your, what do you want to call it, your pattern or whatever, and then you could push it and pull it, you know. A lot of people are into those.
Yeah, they're definitely picking up on the popularity these days.
Right. I mean, I can tell you they're awesome. I'm just too much of a wuss to use them. You know, that's pretty much the hang up right there, is just the fact that I'm a wuss and I don't like to burn. I don't like when my quads fill up with blood and I can barely walk, you know. I'll squat all the time and I'll walk around in pain, but when I can't bend my legs because they're so full of blood and all that, you know, that's what gets scary for me. But the prowlers and sleds are awesome. They're great for you.
Definitely. And for the dorm room thing too, I used to, I was working at Lowe's, so I was making pretty good money.
Uh-huh.
And I actually invested in Iron Mine Vulcan racks.
Okay.
And I mean, that was a $400 investment on my part. And I was like, it took me like a month to get up the nerve to hit order on the Iron Mine website for those things.
Right.
I remember staring at the catalog for every day at work, like, man, I don't know if I should do it or not.
Yeah.
But those things, I actually sold mine on Craigslist here locally because I didn't need them anymore. But I had those things for 3 years, and they look brand new, and they take up no space, and you're able to squat. I mean, you could squat in your kitchen if you had to.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, and I've actually seen pictures of people doing just that. Like, you can see the kitchen sink in the background while they squat.
That's awesome. It's got to be a little army of people all around the world just training in their kitchen.
Yeah.
Where are you people? We need to talk to you.
Hey, you know, when we were training for our first strongman contest, our buddy Pete trained with us, and then he ended up getting a job. Oh man, I think in Denver or something like that. I've kind of lost track of where the heck he went, but he didn't have a real good spot to train, so he bought himself bumpers and a bar and did his Olympic lifts right in his kitchen, right on the linoleum floor, man. He's got pictures and stuff, you know. He was a great kid, you know. I really miss him a lot. It was a good time training strongman with him back in 2003. A lot of good memories there. I wish he'd come back around every once in a while.
That's so cool. I love seeing the thought of that. Like, I mean, that's a you know, training garage gym's breed is a different sort of person.
Yeah.
That'll do whatever it takes. And I truly believe that goes into all aspects of your life and business and relationships. And
exactly, man. You do what it takes in order to get the job done. Exactly.
And by far, you know, it changes you as a person. It's hard to explain. I mean, people listening, if they work out in regular gyms, it's hard to picture that. But once you've experienced the dark side, you never go back.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Let's see. This one is actually, gentleman purchased Smitty's AMD program.
Okay.
And the workout, he says, takes around 40 minutes. Should he be doing interval cardio after, or should he be worried about cortisol levels? I think he's making it a little more complicated than it needs to be.
Yeah, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't cortisol the stuff that goes through your body and, like, breaks down the muscle further in order to, like, repair later on or something like that?
Yeah, I think it's there's that myth that if you work out for longer than 45 minutes, your testosterone falls off.
Yeah, I wouldn't be too worried about that. I mean, I train generally 2 hours straight every time. I generally do at least an hour to an hour and a half of whatever body lift I do. I mean, the way I split my workout up is I usually go 4 days a week. I do an upper body push day, an upper body pull day, and then I do two lower body days. But one of my lower body days is more like a grip emphasis for the double overhand lifts and things like that. But, I mean, I do long workouts. Never had my testosterone checked, but, you know, I've never felt a problem as far as like, you know, if I get up into four-hour workouts, which happens sometimes on weekends when you have five dudes and you're doing strongman stuff and you're doing maximal, you know, max attempts and stuff like that, your workouts are going to be longer. You know, back to the question about AMD, I mean, you don't need to work out that long. There's nothing saying that you need to spend an hour and a half in the gym, but the thing is, you know, because I do the grip stuff and I'm a competitive participant in those contests, I need to dedicate that time to it. So what I generally do is I work out long period of time straight so that I don't have to work out every day, because if I work out every single day, then I don't see the results anymore. That's one thing that I have noticed. So it kind of depends on how this guy's splitting it up. You know, if he thinks that he can make it to the gym multiple times a week, you know, five or six times a week, and he wants to do the cardio on a separate day, you know, I don't think that would be a problem. But I definitely think that he's got to follow what Smitty says in AMD and do the interval training and not the, you know, long, slow, steady pace stuff all the time. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, number one, that's boring. But I number two, I think you're going to get better results doing the interval training and, you know, body weight squats and, you know, sprints and leaps and stuff like that, you know.
For sure. And one of the two is going back to the, you know, like the odd object lifting. And if you're doing, like heavy carries, I mean, that turns into cardio. A lot of people don't realize that, but you're killing two birds with one stone. And I know Elliot and them are working on a new program right now they're going to have out called, it's called Lean Hybrid Muscle, and it's, you know, it's like you're creating a new type of muscle fiber in your body. You're doing cardio and strength training at the same time. And I like that we joke around and call it max effort conditioning. Because if you do repetitive max effort attempts, like you get done, next thing you know, you're laying in a pool of sweat on the floor and you're like,
oh, sure.
Your heart's going 100 beats, you know, 1,000 beats a minute. And you're like, man, I didn't do cardio at all. And then the thought of running is just easy.
Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. And you're conditioned because of what you're already putting yourself through. I know I got a friend at the Naval Academy named Cliff Duman. he speaks at the Pennsylvania clinic that we go to every year. And one of the presentations that he talked about was, see if I can get it right here, the body weight clean and jerk, as many reps as possible in like an hour. And like that was your workout. And, you know, a lot of people think overhead press, again, it's just shoulders, but it's not. It's full body. And you're getting some serious conditioning when you try and do that.
Yeah, by far. And that's why, I mean, it goes back to, the EDT type training and stuff like that, where you simplify everything. You just pick one exercise and you just, crush it and don't stop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's good to throw lifts like that in there. You know what I mean? You don't even have to think about that workout. There's no strategy for that workout. It's a lot easy mentally. You just go out and go lift the weights, and you try to set your mark, and then a few months later, you do it again and try to beat that mark.
Definitely.
One time back in November of 2004, it was me and Smitty, and Eli was there. I don't think Brad was listening with us at the time, but we did one repetition of 405 on the deadlift every minute for an hour.
Wow.
And that was, I kid you not, man, that was one of the best workouts that I ever had. Like halfway home, I had to stop and open my door. I'm not kidding here. I had to open the door and puke out the door because I'd put my body through such torture. Mm-hmm. And I actually ended up getting 100 reps in like an hour and 4 minutes, because once we got to like 55 minutes, then we started doing, sets of four and sets of six, because I wanted to get to 100. So yeah, and that was awesome.
We've done some crazy stuff at that strength camp too. With we did a day with Atlas Stones where it was just me, Elliot, and our friend Brandon,
mm-hmm.
and they were doing the 225 stone, and I at the time couldn't even do the 225 stone. So I was doing the 200-pound keg, and we were doing sets of 10, and it was
uh-huh.
just like, and it was three of us back to back, and I think we were doing 10 sets of 10, and I got to my fifth or sixth set, walked over the bushes and just unloaded.
Yeah, yeah.
And by the time I got done puking, I had to go back up again. So that was
right. It's your turn. Get back on the platform.
Yeah, there's a battle that day, but definitely those kind of sessions, they make you the kind of person that you are.
Yeah, yeah. And you definitely want to make sure that you're puking because of the effort and not because of, like, the environmental, the contamination in the air. Like, for a while, we were training up in Smitty's garage with one of those things that you put the kerosene in and then it blows the hot air out. You ever seen those things? They're
nah,
like a
we...
space heater type deal. And, it was, like, generating all this black smoke and stuff, and we're, like, all getting sick and lightheaded and stuff like that, and... we kind of figured out pretty soon that it wasn't such a good idea to be using this heater because we were pretty sure we were getting some kind of, like, kerosene gas poisoning. So so we got rid of that right away. But, yeah, you have to every once in a while, put in the effort that you literally make yourself sick. That's a lot of fun.
And it doesn't have to be done every time for the people listening. Your goal in training is not to make yourself puke every time.
No, not every time. Way to put that disclaimer in there, brother.
There's those angry workouts where, maybe you just got dumped by your girlfriend or you found out your parents hate you or
right.
You wrecked your car and you just need to let yourself vomit all over your workout attire.
Yeah.
So. Next question we got here is a gentleman asks, what is the best and least expensive way to make a sturdy homemade power rack for squats and pulls?
Cool. I've never made a squat rack, but there was one that I saw that was awesome. And I think I saw this squat rack on the grip board, gripboard.com. Someone put it up in their personal photo gallery. But they made it out of 2x6s, like big 2x6 pieces of wood, and it was fastened together with gigantic carriage bolts, man. And I mean, this thing looked like a caveman piece of equipment. So that would be one way to do it. As far as like, for rack pulls, if you have a set of jacks, like I picked up a set of like old worn out jack supports for like your car, and I use those for like a year in my basement before I actually had my garage. I would just set the bar on there, and I trained 18-inch deadlift for a strongman contest one time for about 6 weeks, pulling off of just jacks, and they work great for a deadlift rack, pulling rack.
I've seen a lot of I know if you're working from home and you don't have like enough for a rack, I mean, I've seen you pretty much the next best thing is to do, I forget what they call it, where you start from bottom position stuff. And I've seen guys make like just out of like, you know, sturdy like PVC pipe and stuff with like metal like bars, rigging it up.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to be careful with that stuff. And obviously, I mean, I used to use sawhorses as spotter racks.
Oh, yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah, that's a real good idea.
I mean, things like that. I mean, you spend like $30-$40 on, I'd recommend the metal ones over the plastic. I had better luck with those, but I mean, they'll save you one time.
And yeah.
If you fall over with, you know, a lot of weight on there, you're going to probably want to replace those, because mine actually fell and I dropped the squat and they bent upwards and it was kind of ugly, but they saved me. So.
Right. The, you know, that's a good point coming from the bottom, you know, just, you know, setting the bar on, you know, maybe a couple kegs. You go and get a couple kegs from the distributor. A lot of time, I mean, at least around where I live, of course, I know everybody in town, but, you know, I just go to the distributor and I'm like, hey, you know, you got any of these kegs laying around you're not using anymore? And they've given me multiple kegs. I don't even know how many kegs we have. I think we have like a half dozen kegs or something like that. We haven't paid for a single one of them, you know? So you could set your bar on those and do bottoms up squats.
Yeah, I always tend to go back to Iron Mind because it's like they always tend to have something for people of our nature and do what we do. And I think Pillars of Power.
Uh huh.
I think they always have a clever name and a cool story.
Right.
With all
that yeah.
Stuff.
Yeah.
So you read the Iron Mind catalog, it's like a magazine. It's all, I get psyched when I get a new one in the mail.
Yeah, it's always cool to check that out, like, around Christmas time when they send the new one out and they have, like, new gadgets in there and stuff. Iron Mind has been great to Smitty and me over the years. They've supported many contests in the past, and they've got a lot of good stuff. And remember, you know, it's not just you have to go buy the stuff. If you know a dude, you know, you may not have the skills. I have no skills as far as, like, welding, torch cutting, hammering. You know, the only thing I do with nails is bend them. So I'm no good with building most stuff, unless it's just like fastening pipes together or something like that. If it takes any kind of skill at all, I usually like get my dad to help me out, or we're real good friends with these dudes that own a car garage, and they've helped me build stuff. And if you find a good dude that really knows how to make that stuff, all they need is like a picture and maybe some quick measurements, and they'll get it right, you know. And a lot of times they'll do it for free. You just have to pay for the scrap steel that you're using.
Yeah, it helps to befriend people in your local area.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
Yeah, number one rule is kiss everyone's ass for like 3 years straight and then ask for favors later. Don't come up and just ask for favors. You know, do something for the person first. Help them out, you know, give them some free training lessons or something like that, you know, and they'll be more apt to helping you out later on down the road.
Definitely. Next question is how to make Indian clubs. I'm going to leave that one to you because I don't even really know what I'm in. I think we use a mace the first time when I was with you, but I have no idea really what an Indian club is.
Yeah, Indian clubs are very similar to a mace. It's just they're shorter. And you can get Indian clubs on the net, and, you know, they range from reasonable prices to extraordinary prices. One of the best places to get clubs like that is StrongerGrip.com. But if you don't have the money to get something like that, you can accomplish the same thing, and there's a couple ways that I know of to do it. Are you familiar with wiffle ball at all, Ryan?
Am I? No.
No? You never played wiffle ball, dude?
Oh, I mean, I know what a wiffle ball is, but I didn't know if it was like a. You made that sound like it was like a like a club or like a sport or something.
No, well, no, I just recreational weekend play up here in Pennsylvania, man. But you can get the wiffle ball bats that are like the big caveman clubs. Have you ever seen those? They're like big red things. They're like 4 inches around at the end. And I actually made a club, like an Indian club, out of one of those. I just popped a hole. I took a screwdriver and poked a hole in the handle. And then I just put sand into the whole entire wiffle ball bat. And it ends up weighing like 15 pounds. And then you can do your Indian club work with that right there. As long as you tape up the handle where you poked a hole in it, the sand isn't going to come out. It might work its way out, you know what I mean? But it's going to stay in there for a while. And that's a real good way to train for grip strength. You know, it's not all about, you know, picking up five dimes or closing grippers. You know, sometimes it's like swinging clubs and things like that. And you can make that work real nice. I did that, you know, this is back before I had my garage, so I had a nice warm environment all the time. Sometimes I would train out on the concrete pad, and you know it might be 40 degrees because it gets cold up here, and you know it was tough to warm up. So what I used to do is do the Indian club swings with that wiffle ball bat, and it worked out great. Really would warm up your shoulders, get your grip on, you know, your forearms, your biceps and triceps, and I'd be hitting, you know, good log press PRs after warm ups with that bat.
Wow, that's an ingenious way to do that. I would have never.
I mean,
like
those
that.
Things cost you nothing, dude. They're like, I don't know. I think you can get them at the like Kmart for like $2, and then you don't even have to buy sand. Just throw some dirt in there. You know, if you're not worried too much about bacteria and microbes, just throw that dirt in there. You know.
Yeah, we tend not to worry about that stuff.
Yeah, you know, you got to eat some dirt in life. You know. So, there's no way around it.
I think Joe just hopped on the line. Joe, you on the line right now, buddy?
Yeah, Ryan, what's going on?
There you
go. Hi, Joe.
Hey, Jed, what's up?
Got
sneak attacking you guys.
You are. You came in all quiet. I had to text you to find out if you're on the line.
Well, I heard Indian Club, so I had to get on.
Apparently, I'm the only one that doesn't really use these things. They know what they are.
Well, yeah, Jed brought up the easiest way to do it. It's just awesome to make them out of those wiffle bottle bats. You can get them out like the dollar store. You know, you cover them up good with some tape and stuff, but they last pretty good for you. I've seen people make them out of just pipe, like Jed said, just screwing stuff together. You don't have to weld them. You get like an inch and a half handle to a reducer and like a, you know, two and a half inch top of it, and you usually fill up the handle with like that expand-a-foam stuff, and then fill up the head of it. You can fill it with shots. You can have like loadable Indian clubs right there. It's made out of metal, so those will last forever.
Jeez. I get scared of things like that, like bats and mace ball. Like I tried that mace ball with you guys at Fast Track, and I felt like I was going to like hurt myself.
Yeah, you looked like you were too.
That video's up on my YouTube channel, by the way, everybody.
Yeah, it's pretty ugly. But there was some good deadlifts in that day, though.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that thing loaded up all the way.
Well, Joe, since you're on the line now, let's get a little background from you. You know, tell us how you got into lifting and started Bull Strength and met Jed and Smitty and how this all kind of came to be for you.
Oh, well, I'll keep it kind of quick, 'cause I know you guys have already been into it for about 45 minutes here. I got into lifting in high school for sports, like a lot of people get into it. Nothing fancy about it. There's a couple guys. They're my dad's friends, and one of them went to some NFL camps, and he played football at West Point. And he picked me up in the morning before high school and took me to the local gym. And went to college up at Colgate University and picked up tons of stuff at their weight training program. I ended up, this is kind of the big change. I ended up, my sophomore year, I ended up getting hurt. I had like 4 knee surgeries. I was fat. I was out of shape. So that summer I had to do a bunch of, you know, learning and taking it all in and actually applying it to myself. When I got hurt, I was like a 310-pound offensive lineman, and then I cut down to like 250 and started getting more healthy. And, you know, and I ended up meeting, I think we met Jed first just via YouTube.
Yeah.
I was like, hey, you know, Jed got some cool videos, and he's like, yeah, you look like you live pretty close. Let's just get together and get some training in. So, I mean,
that's kind of like you guys met off of YouTube. kind of cool.
Yeah, I think that's actually how it happened, yeah.
Interesting. Good stuff. So tell us, let's see, we got quite about 10 to 15 questions for you tonight, Joe, and I actually didn't get a chance to send those over, so you're going to be on the spot tonight.
That's fine. That's
hope
fine.
We don't get angry.
If I don't know an answer, I'll just pretend like I'm going through a tunnel or something.
And, Jed, feel free to chime in on these, too, as well.
Sure, buddy. Yep.
Yep. First question is, do both of you guys do any cardio? If not, why?
I'll jump in first. I do cardio. I love it. But I do love certain kinds of cardio. And the thing with cardio is, just like the thing with lifting is, if you don't like it, you're not going to keep doing it. So I don't like, you know, pounding the pavement. Some people do. What I do is I do a lot of heavy bag work, you know, Tabata, heavy bag drills, doing that the last couple of weeks. And in the summer I'll do a lot of sled work and prowler pushes and some hill sprints and things like that. I like the explosive stuff. I like to hit it for about 20 minutes, and I like to hit it for about 3, maybe 4 times a week when I'm coaching and I don't have time to get into the gym as much. So I'll hit the hills on the way home or something like that. So, yeah, I certainly do it. Certainly like what I do. So, hey, if you like it, you're going to do it. So that's the kind of things I choose. I like a little bit of variety, so it works for me.
And, Jay, we kind of got your opinion on that one a little bit.
Yeah, you know,
acid build up.
The prowlers are out for me. I do kettlebells, and I do the club bell swings. But as far as like your stereotypical cardio where it's just one kind of movement, I don't do any running or anything like that. It's mostly maybe some jump rope. You know, I really love jump rope and I'm pretty good at it. And I can actually, you know, put on a CD or something like that and do some jump rope. But you know, and it, you know, I go for speed and consecutive jumps and things like that. But you know, running and stuff is just not for me.
Yeah, you're a bigger guy too. That's kind of odd to see you jumping rope. I don't know. That'd be a sight.
Yeah, the roads around here are pretty windy, and you know, I'd hate to have a car hit me and you know I destroy their car.
Yeah,
and Joe,
there's a lot of blind corners.
Joe being every bit of 7'5" and 300 pounds there.
Yeah. I would be hitting that road. No, I will add that. I do have cardio in my programs for the athletes. Of course, they need cardio for their sports. But me personally, I'll just do what I like. Them, they have to do, you know, what's going to achieve their goals. So a little bit different for them.
Good stuff. Well, next one we got is, what do you guys think about high intensity training, more specifically rest pause type training that's used in the dog crap style methods? I don't know.
We did dog crap stuff for a while. Dude, I just love training. You know, I don't do the same stuff for months and months straight. I do different stuff all the time. I mean, dog crap's cool. Work it in every so often. I don't know if it's the best option for athletes per se, but, you know, for the strength and conditioning enthusiast like myself and, you know, a lot of people would enjoy that. You know, that's pretty cool every so often.
Yeah, that doesn't look like it hurts. Rest pause.
Yeah, it hurts. I'm sure it does. I like a little bit of rest pause in with more of the accessory lifts. I still, you know, old school, got to have those strength lifts in or their dynamic movements in first, and then I'll incorporate some other stuff and work it into the program.
Good stuff. Like, the rest, I've never actually done the dog crap style of training, so I assume is it just like extended sets where you just kind of like 4 reps and that? I don't actually know what it is.
You take a weight that's like 80% of your max, and then you do as many reps as you can, but you leave like a couple in the tank for 30 seconds straight or something like that, and then you rest for 10 seconds. Isn't that how it goes, Joe? It's been a while since I've done it.
I that's roughly what I've read about. I've only done the rest pause. I haven't done much of the dog crap training myself.
But I mean, if any of the listeners wanna search for it, it's easy enough to find. Isn't it actually spelled with 2 G's, the dog crap?
Right.
Yeah. I think it is, too.
Yeah. So, I mean, the information's out there. You know, it's pretty cool. It's kind of like, you know, it's like that thing that I talked about earlier back in 2004 when we did the one rep every minute for an hour. You know, it's cool to stick in there every so often. I'm not sure it's the best way to go about doing things as the primary basis for your program.
Right, right. I agree with Jed on that. Like this, all the stuff we've been talking about is cool to work in, and you might be able to, you know, get on it for a little while and break a plateau, but you still have to have your kind of your groundwork exercise, your groundwork program that you go back to keep the games going.
I know a lot. Like Jed, sorry, you kind of tend to just train. I mean, I'm kind of the same way. I try to follow a plan, but I don't. I'm guilty of just kind of. Oh, well, I know it's lower body day, so let's make some shit up. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, do you follow, like, a specific plan with your guys' workouts, or is it, you know, just, a vertical push today, so what are we going to do?
I do the upper body push, I do the upper body pull, and then I do a leg day or two. I don't structure things too much for that stuff because I put my mental focus on the grip stuff. So all my grip stuff is patterned toward the numbers that I want to try to hit for each lift at the contest. So I periodize for the grip stuff, whereas the other stuff I just pretty much make sure that that I'm hitting a PR every few weeks and stuff like that. If I'm able to hit a PR every couple weeks or every 3 weeks, then I know that my training's on for the body lifts.
And for me, I used to not plan as much, and I realized I was a hypocrite because I was telling everyone to plan like a year ago, and I started planning. Things worked out better for me. I know it's a little bit annoying, but once I just kind of using the template I use for my athletes and changing it for me. I won't plan like certain percentages all the time or the exact accessory lifts. I'll plan the primary lifts. I'll have my goal down for my last set, try to break that, and then working the accessory lifts where I feel I need to work for that specific week. So I'll know whether I'm doing deadlifts or weighted chin-ups or bench or squat and how many reps and how many sets I'll be doing before I go in the gym. And I know some people who actually don't do that, and it's worked out very well for them. I was talking to one, I think he played college running back. His name was Lynn Parker from this area, and he's big into training. And he said he hates to plan because then he kind of gets – he sees it as like a mental limitation, like I'm going to hit six sets of three on this last – or, you know, my last set will be three. But, you know, if you can get more, you always go more. And so it just kind of fits your own training personality, I guess.
Yeah, and I think environment plays a big role in that too. I mean, I know that, like, every time I try to plan something out, I go to the gym and Elliot tells me I'm not doing that, I'm doing something else. But if anybody's met Elliot, they know why. You just listen to Elliot.
Well, I guess if you go to a different commercial gym as well, I mean, you might show up for a big squat day, and there might be a line of eight people trying to curl in the squat rack. so you might have to change your strategy a little bit since I have my own place. And it's kind of do what I want, I guess. But those who go to the commercial gym, then, yeah, you want to try to hit it where your primary looks the same and then kind of work around what you can do, how many people are trying to pick up girls on the machines you need and whatever.
The women are a lot better at the commercial gyms, though. I will say that.
Than my basement, than my garage gym.
Yeah, we don't get too many good-looking girls that roll up into strength camp either.
I can't imagine.
But next question here, we got, see. Hey, guys, if you were to choose one exercise out of squats and deadlifts for building muscle and gaining strength, which one would you choose?
Oh, this is like a never-ending argument. I go on any forum, and you'll see the thread in, like, the top 20 threads, squat or deadlift, how many times should I squat and deadlift, which is great. I'd rather have them trying to decide between squat and deadlift than squat and leg extension or something like that.
Yep.
Oh, man, if I had to choose one for, what was the goal for? Did you say for strength?
Well, he put muscle building first, so he probably doesn't really care about strength too much. He just wants to look good, so I know that's why I'm there.
Well, I guess for overall muscle building, if you do it right, I would say squat. But, man, it's so hard to choose. If you're doing full range of motion, you're doing squat right, you're tensing your lats, you're flexing your abs out, you're getting low, you're incorporating your glutes sitting back, things like that, then I give the slight edge to squat, but I wouldn't do just one. I'd get them both in there. You know, hit that deadlift, you're also going to get all the legs, you know, feeling your upper back. So, I mean, there's a lot of muscles involved in both of them. So the more muscles involved, the more muscles that are going to be built during that movement.
I think deadlifts can probably cure cancer eventually. They're going to discover that. Everybody's ailments could be fixed if they just did deadlifts a little bit more.
More deadlifts. I'm too squat, I guess, a little bit, but yeah, I love deadlifting. I can't not do it anymore. It's like an addiction.
That is true. I deadlifted and squatted today, so I just couldn't decide which one. I did them both.
I deadlifted, so I deadlifted on a 2.5-inch axle. So gotta love
those
deadlifts.
I think everybody tries to pick just one. Like this one exercise, and I always get that. I mean, I've interviewed like 16 different people now so far, and there's always somebody that throws in that question if you had to pick one exercise.
Yeah.
But if it's between squats and deadlifts, you obviously have a bar and you can do both. So why choose?
Right, but I understand the purpose of the question. Someone wants to get into like a philosophical discussion on which one will work better. But you know, if I had to choose, I'm sticking with squat just a slight bit better. But if you have knee problems, then the deadlift is going to not put as much stress on the knees. If you have back problems, you got to work around what you got too. But I do definitely do them both.
I mean, the squatting too. Like I'm a way better deadlift than I am squatter due to I have really long limbs and like a long torso and extremely long legs. So squatting it takes me forever to get warmed up to the point where I can even get a good looking squat. But
well,
deadlift, I just walk up and straight leg round back that thing and pull it right off the ground.
Maybe you're just getting a little older like the rest of us and get a warm up a little bit.
Possible. It's possible. I'm never going to admit that, though.
Right.
Next one. Can you build muscle by using mace balls? This is the next question we got.
Can you build muscle?
Yeah.
Using what?
Mace balls.
Mace bells?
Yeah, maybe I am getting old now. That looked like an A.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of a common, misnomer or whatever you want to call it. I think you can build. A lot of times, building muscle depends on the amount of tension that you can create. And I think if you're using a big enough, heavy enough mace bell, like we showed people how to build a pretty cool freaking mace bell in the Homemade Strength
pretty cool.
DVD. And it's going to cost you $5 to do it. And hell yeah, I mean, I think that's a good thing to work on. There's definitely some skill to it, but if you do it right, I mean, it's not too risky as far as injury is concerned. And I think it's gonna light up your forearms, your back, especially your upper back, and your grip and arms and forearms.
Yeah, Jim made a good point there. Jim made a good point there at the beginning. It's if you're using it for rehab purposes, you're doing something real light, then you're not going to build that much muscle in any exercise. But if you're loaded up and you actually get into the movement, and you're performing it right, then you can certainly build muscle with it.
Or you can just try to use one and look like an idiot on YouTube. Like,
yeah, or you could check out Jed's YouTube and check Ryan trying to swing Jed's. I don't know how heavy that was. It was loaded.
It was a good 20 pounds anyway. I've actually forgotten how much it weighed, but 20 pounds doesn't sound like much, or 30 pounds or wherever it was. But I mean, when you consider that with a mace bell, you're dealing with leverage. It's pretty tough. Yeah, you got to have serious not only hand strength but also the wrist strength. You got to be able to control the implement, or else your wrists are going to buckle and you're not going to be able to do it. You're not going to be able to push it over your shoulder or pull it over the other shoulder.
It definitely humbled me. I was a little shocked.
Yeah.
I didn't go home and build one.
Yeah.
Next time I probably use one of those is when I see you guys again. I'm going to be like, wow, I still suck as bad as I did the last time.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, there's another name for mace bells you probably heard of called sledgehammer. They'll work just as well. But it's much cooler if you build your own, like the one that Joe and I made. But I'll just throw that out there real quick. Homemade.
That thing was all like billets. The one I saw was like billet aluminum, looking all pretty too. Like you had polished it up, painted it, put like a picture of you guys on there and hugged it together.
Well, the one that you tried on was a stronger grip model, and they're awesome. Like, they hold up to a beating. Like, I took these somewhere, and the dude tried to pick it up and ended up dropping it, and it didn't bend at all. So, I mean, they hold up to a beating. They're really good quality.
Good stuff. Well, the next question goes back on the density training. I'm kind of a long-winded question here, so I'm going to try to paraphrase it for you guys. Can density training replace heavy lifting? Meaning, if we do an exercise with only 20 seconds rest for 5 minutes, in the beginning we would hit low-twitch muscle fibers, but after 2 or 3 minutes, the weight would feel very heavy, so then we hit the fast-twitch muscle fibers. That doesn't really make any sense. The advantage of this would be telling your body that you're lifting heavy without actually using heavy weights. By doing them, you're sparing your joints. What do you think? I'll let you guys tell him what I can say. What I think later after you guys do.
Try to decipher that a little bit. Can you? Yes, because it depends on what your goals are. If you want to be, the strongest, most explosive athlete, I wouldn't recommend it. If you want to, I think I heard somewhere in there that, it's tough to tell without this person's individual goals. But generally speaking, if you're working for just general strength, which, you know, a lot of people are, so some of those are the goals, there's better ways to go about it. You can do it, but I would certainly, like I mentioned earlier, still go with a strength exercise or explosive exercise first. I don't think necessarily you'll be hitting any fast twitch fibers by late in the set when you're probably moving the weight real slow and really hurting yourself by then. Hurting physically, you can't move the weight anymore. But I would definitely, for overall balanced program, mix it up. You want to go with the density, dog crap, rest pause method for a little while, then give it a shot. If that's your goals, or get a quick workout in, then that might work for you.
Definitely.
I mean, Go ahead, Ryan.
No, I think it comes down to the overcomplication thing again. You get so obsessed with training, you read so much stuff on the internet, you want to try everything. But really, it just comes down to, you have to lift heavy. I personally believe that. You're not going to, if your goal is sports, gaining muscle, looking good, getting girls, whatever it may be, if you don't lift heavy, you're not going to get those results. That's kind of my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I mean, I don't think the density training is going to replace the max effort training for strength and power development. I just don't see that happening. I think that it's cool again for maybe your finisher. If you're employing a finisher movement, put some dog crap in there at the end. I think that would be good. But mix it up. Don't do that all the time. I think you're limiting yourself.
Definitely. Going next question is what is an alternative for a hamstring exercise if you do not have a glute ham race? What would you guys recommend?
Deadlift.
Romanian deadlift, Keystone deadlift, straight leg deadlift, deadlift.
That's it. Deadlift. We get
one leg deadlift.
We have a contest. You can name the most deadlifts. One leg RDL, good morning. One leg good morning.
Prisoner deadlift.
Pull throughs. I've been putting a little exercise index in the last just this week, and I've started with kind of the posterior chain, including the hamstring. So I put a couple videos of deadlifts up on the YouTube. Just put up pull throughs. I don't know what kind of equipment they might have. Or you can do kettlebell swings, if you're talking accessory work. If you're talking max strength work, your primary lift is probably going to be a form of the deadlift. I'm going to stick to that answer.
If you don't have a glute ham raise, then make your own. We show you how to make one for about $5 in the homemade strength DVD.
I told you, I forgot about this. There's ways to do it where, if you're training in your own place, your own house, and definitely make one. It's very simple. I forget. When Jen came over and we made it, I made it out of scrap wood that I had left over from a deck project. Just whipped one together in about 10 minutes. There's different variations. If you have a friend that you train with, you can have them hold your feet, put your knees on the soft, and do kind of floor glute ham raises. You got to push off the ground a little bit. Those are real hard, actually. You do good banded good mornings. You do different cable work, but I go deadlift, then I go the accessory stuff. We're just talking about Jed just mentioned glute ham raise. Doesn't take a lot of time to make one either.
Yeah, I used I made one a while back because I've been on Ross Training's website, Ross and Ahmed's site, and he had a cool killer one on there, and I built mine for like probably $30. But I went all overboard. I made it like a loading platform. And,
right.
It's like if I'm gonna build something, I wanna build something. So that's kind of. But and next question we got is, how do I maintain and grow to be an explosive athlete?
Could you repeat that? How do you maintain?
How do you maintain and grow to be an explosive athlete? So I assume he just wants to know how to gain explosive power.
All right. I'll go first. There's a couple different ways. The easiest ways that I've used, number one, incorporating the dynamic effort method where this is where a lot of people go wrong. Now, I know a lot of people on this call are already involved in strength training. You probably know this, but you go to a different gym. I've been to some gyms around the area that are supposedly athlete training places, and they'll have them do for their primary exercise like 3 sets of 20 box jumps. And, you know, by the time they reach like the 5th one, their form's going to hell. By the time they reach the 10th one, they're out of gas. By the time they reach the 20th one, they're probably hitting their shins on the box. For explosion, you want to train it like you're training your max strength. You're going to taper down the reps, you know, keep in the 1 to 5 rep range, 5 being pretty high even, and just absolutely explode rate of force development, explode as fast as you can during those reps. Now, I mentioned dynamic effort method. You may do that with deadlift, squat. You may do it with a bench press. So you want to get explosive power in the upper body and the lower body. A lot of people just think leg explosion, get that vertical jump, dunk a basketball, get that date, you know, win that girl, whatever. But there's a lot more to it. So first thing, dynamic effort method, good for explosion. Second thing, throwing things, keep it very simple. I've had some videos. I just have a car tire. It's very easy to teach them how to throw. They reach back, they explode their hips, they get triple extension, they're launched to this car tire. Like if you watch Strongman, they do it with kegs over bars. They throw kegs with, I don't know if there's sand in there, probably Strongman, it's just straight lead or something. So they throw them over bars. They do it with a tire because they can actually gauge how far they're throwing it, gauge their explosiveness. Very easy, very safe exercise to teach. So they do throwing things, dynamic effort method. Rambled on a little bit there. I'll turn it over to Jed.
No, I totally agree. I don't even have that much to add. It's just I think it's really important to remember the rep range and keep it low, because for powerful movements and explosive movements, you're going to start burning out after like 3 to 5 reps. So if you keep going too much beyond that, you're working against yourself. Do more sets and do fewer reps per set.
Awesome.
Yeah. Just make sure they're crazy explosive, too. And I did mention weighted exercise. You can still do that box jump, but you should be progressively increasing it or increasing how high you're jumping and keep it in that, 1 to 5, just a 3 to 5 rep range. Get up near your max explosion. So instead of jumping at, a sub-maximal level a bunch of times, you're jumping as high as you can a few times with more complete rest, getting that explosive power to be a good athlete.
Nice. I know a lot of times, too, it's overlooked is the more you kind of concentrate on building the strength in the gym and then play your sport. For a lot of people, I think that takes place. It seems to be that most of the advanced people, really need, concentrating on explosive. I see that a lot with, people, kids coming in the strength camp all the time, training with Elliot. It's just everybody's always trying to get more explosive, but in turn, they're just weak.
Yeah, you mentioned something very important, and big problem, misconception I see out there is that a lot of parents will send their kids or different athletes will go to these places that's just like literally a turf field, and they'll do sprints, they'll do crunches, and they'll do push-ups. And they'll say, now you're ready for your sport, now you're explosive, and it's more than likely breaking them down. The kids got to have a general strength base. You're not going to be able to – they can't flex bone, is the saying. You don't have any muscle. You can't flex your hamstrings, you can't fire your glutes, you're not going to be able to sprint faster. So you've got to get a general strength base. Kind of the sport-specific part of training is mostly the the cardio is the very first, very second question I had here. That conditioning is going to be the sport-specific aspect, but you want to get strong, you want to get explosive, and it usually comes in that order, strong and explosive. Of course, it's a little carryover at the same time, but you're not going to get explosive just based on running movements alone. You gotta get strong, too.
Good stuff. Next question. How often do you recommend changing up your routine?
Yeah, sure. You know, the thing that comes to mind is probably if you're able to monitor the numbers that you're putting up in the gym, when your numbers start to stagnate, it's probably time to switch something up. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that you have to go from like, your max effort and dynamic effort style of training into dog crap workouts or, you know, grip strength focus workouts or anything like that. What I'm saying is you have to make subtle adjustments sometimes in order to break through plateaus and things like that. So I think it's a good idea. You know, you don't have to write every single number down. I've never been good at keeping a workout log. I find that it just kind of it almost like just burns more time while you're at the gym. You know, I'm able to, you know, and I've been doing this for 12 years or whatever, how long I've been training. So I kind of have an idea of where my numbers are at all times. And I know that if my numbers are stagnating, it's probably time for me to change something up. Maybe I got to start putting some band resistance in. Maybe I have to start employing some chains. Maybe I have to do some more stability stuff. Maybe I have to do some odd object stuff. Maybe it's just as simple as changing up the implements for a couple weeks. Maybe it's the rep ranges. Maybe it's the tempo of the lifts. Maybe, you know, the list goes on of different ways to change it up, and it doesn't have to be too drastic. Sometimes it's pretty simple, but the most important thing is to just be able to monitor and have an idea where you're at all times.
Excellent, Dad. That's pretty much it. I'm not going to add too much more, but you shouldn't be changing your program as much as you should be alternating your exercises within a program. So if you're on if you choose conjugate or concurrent periodization, or if you choose, you know, various different programs, it should allow for variables like with the bull strength manual I wrote. There's going to be changes in exercises, but the overall program and the goals, the progression goals are still going to be in place. So you're going to switch up some accessory lifts. You might alternate your big lifts. And bottom line is, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. If your program are getting consistent gains, then you're not going to switch it up. Now, I don't want to be like the cop-out answer. It's going to break sometime. You're not going to get gains. Your body's going to get too used to what you're doing. So you're going to have to switch it up. I'm going to give you a general range. You're probably going to look for that to happen in about, try maybe 6 to 10 week range. It depends on your training age, how long you've been training. But you look for that, and you make your switches, and then you train with your switches in place for a little while, and you switch back to your regular program and test to see if it works. Always, Jed mentioned he's not good at writing his numbers down, which a lot of people aren't, but you should be able to test roughly every few weeks, like, did my deadlift go up, did my deadlift go down? You don't have to write it down every single workout, but you should be, you know, get certain measurements, certain testing protocols in place so you know if the program is working. I always go with testing protocols for, you know, max strength, relative strength, explosive strength are the three main testings that I do.
Good stuff.
And again, we're kind of coming at it as an angle, of like for our own training. If you're a personal trainer or a strength coach, you know, you definitely have to keep a good track of what your athletes are doing, and
right.
You know, that detail is more important if you're a strength coach.
Good stuff. Another last question here is, who are you guys as mentors? Who do you look up to, and who do you follow on a regular basis? Like what they're doing in training.
Oh, there's a whole bunch for me. One is Jed and Smitty at the Diesel Crew. Those guys really know their stuff. I think they're the mobility videos that Smitty just put out, I think they're awesome. And I think a lot of their stuff they do is, you know, underappreciated. So definitely those guys. I'm not just saying it because Jed's on the other line and he could probably pop my head off with his hands. But definitely those guys. I started off, like a lot of people started off, I read all my Ask Joe columns over at DeFranco's Training.
Oh, man.
Okay.
I could recite those.
All those. And a lot of, it's not just internet guys either. It's, I'm living in the internet world. A lot of local guys, like I mentioned, the guy before, he used to take me to the gym in the mornings. A lot of local guys have really helped me out, too. So when it comes to, you know, the popular people that everyone out there is familiar with, I'd definitely say the Diesel Crew guys. I'd say DeFranco from his Ass Joe. I picked up and incorporated some stuff from Louis Simmons from his West Side Barbell. He's got a lot of articles out there that, you know, aren't the easiest to read all the time, but they're very informative, so I'm always checking that stuff out.
And so what about you, Jed?
Well, the truth of the matter is I'm not a real well-read individual. I haven't dug through a lot of the classic books and manuals that a lot of other people have, but I do really enjoy going to clinics. And I've heard Louis speak a couple times, heard Jim Wendler speak many times, and they've really had a lasting influence on me. And I think the first time I heard Louis speak was in 2001. And, you know, I still remember some of the things that he talked about that day, and, you know, I still employ them. Wendler, I've heard him speak, and really, you know, he was probably the seminar that I heard him speak at in 2004 up in New England was probably what keeps me going to this day as far as just the experience. It wasn't so much what he was saying, it's just, you know, the feeling that I got when he was speaking. And that's where I kind of figured out that I wanted to be able to, I wanted to be a bigger presence on the internet and be able to help more people, you know, with their training and how to be creative with their training. So that was a big turning point for me, you know, and really it's, you know, Smitty is very, very intelligent dude. I mean, he's got he had a double major for math and physics at Mansfield, and that's where I went as well. So I know that must be a very good program since the great education in Spanish that I got there. So, but, you know, he's like the mad scientist. I always call him the mad scientist, and anything that he's willing to try, I know that there's some benefit that's going to come out of it. So I look up to him a lot of times as well for my training information. What about you, Ryan?
Me? That's a good question. I don't know. I always ask everybody else. I kind of stumbled upon the internet world and the strength training world, I want to say about 7 years ago now, when I weighed 170 pounds. I had just lost like 20 pounds because I stopped drinking Mountain Dew. And that was like my breakthrough in, you know, weight loss. Was, wow, you stopped drinking soda, you lose weight. But I found the first guy I somehow found Joe DeFranco's T-Nation article, West Side for Skinny Bastards, like within like 2 days of being on the internet searching training. I don't know how I found it or where I got. So, I mean, like I devoured the Ass Joe column like right away. And then through that I found all the Iron Mind guys. And Joe, like, just through all that, you know, dinosaur training and super squats, and then it became a passion, and then I stumbled upon the Zach Evanesh and Elite Fitness Systems and all those guys. So I went on I signed up to, at the time I wanted to turn pro on my bike, so I was training for that, and Joe's, DeFranco's program pretty much put me on the right path to accomplish that goal, so I always owe that to him. And I paid, I want to say it was like $600 to attend the Elite Fitness Systems Syracuse Strength Spectacular, which is in Syracuse, New York. And I flew up there, and I'll never forget it because I had my bike in a bag with me because I was flying to a bike race the following weekend. And I just kind of walked in like to the oddball, like, and I met all those guys there, and like Jim Wendler and Dave Tate. And then from that point on, it was just Elite Fitness Systems, you know, Jim Wendler, Dave Tate. And then through Zach Evanesh, I met Elliot Holtz, who I train with to this day. So, I mean, it was and we've been kind of an underground guy that both me and Elliot look up to is a guy named Tom Mitchell. And he runs the NAS, the National Association of Strongmen, in Florida. Mm. And we went to a little local seminar that he did put on by one of the guys at a CrossFit gym in Sarasota, about an hour away. And he spoke there, and really the whole seminar was like, what are your three favorite exercises? Cool, do those all every day, and then let's go do strongman training out back. And so we got into strongman, both me and Elliot, at the same exact time, got into like really, like this guy pushed, I mean, I was in a college shirt and nice jeans, and I left just, my outfit was destroyed, but I was like a whole new person. Like, he just showed us the, like, basically just volume training. Like, all right, well, that's a 400-pound sled. How about we drag it for a mile? That sounds good. You and Elliot go on that one, and the other guys go on that one. And basically, we just made it through this guy's workout, and he said, have you guys ever thought about training strongman? And I was like, no, it never even occurred to me. And then same thing with Elliot. And then the following weekend, we were training at his house every Saturday.
Awesome.
So that kind of started the passion that I have for strongman lifting. And just, I mean, it was always there, but never really structured. And then from then, it was like, you know, I still ride my bike all the time and compete in strongman contests occasionally when I feel like, you know, getting hurt.
Yeah, there you go. Hey, you know
yourself.
What? The injuries happen, though. It's something you can't just go blind into a strongman contest, because you got to be ready to commit to five or six grueling events, and you know what? You may end up with some slight injuries after that contest, but you're going to be proud of yourself no matter how you finish or whatever. That's how strongman is, because you know that you're going in that it's going to be a big challenge.
Yeah, by far. I mean, I did my first strongman comp was you know, I guess life changing. I mean, it was awesome. Just the fact that you made it through all the events all day, and I think I got so sick the next day because I just, you know, you leave it all there, like you have nothing left, and you have like, and the crazy thing about it is there's like 20 other people doing the same thing as you,
mm-hmm.
and it puts you into a different mindset, and that you can, you know, push yourself to those, you know, that far and that much.
Mm-hmm.
Most people never get to experience that. It's kind of good. But tell us a little bit about you guys, your homemade strength DVD, and what do people get with that? What's included?
Yeah, the base program is actually an online DVD, and what you do is you just download it. It's like an hour long video that you download. And we make like 8 pieces of equipment in there. We show you exactly how to make them. We go step by step through the whole process. But then also, what people don't realize is we also feature about another like half dozen pieces of equipment in there that you can make on yourself, you know, on your own. That we don't go into the instruction, but they're excellent pieces of equipment. So there's a lot of good stuff in there. There's also some pretty cool bonuses. For instance, there's an unannounced bonus where I show everybody how to put together one of the most intense grip strength training pieces of equipment that you can make. And I love training on this thing. Joe's trained on it. In fact, it's been in a bunch of our videos. It's called Napalm's Nightmare. And this thing is a thick bar, rotating handle. That you use two hands on, and it's just like performing kettlebell swings. Only you're able to grab it with two hands. The thing is just killer. It'll light you up like a Christmas tree. And then we also have some other bonuses that go along with that. So I mean, there's a lot of value packed into a pretty low price.
Oh, awesome!
Yeah, it was great getting together with Jed. He came over here, and we just started building equipment, videotaping it, and you know, the online DVD really, you know, shows people how to make a lot of stuff. Like the ham raise that already came up, club bells that already came up, a lot of stuff that people are asking about. We went out and we have the original piece of equipment. We trained with them, so we were able to make replicas of what it actually is. We just didn't, you know, make the stuff out of nowhere. You know, we both have stronger grip maces, and those are great pieces of equipment. We figured out how to make some at home, and it's really worked out well, I think. We've been getting great feedback from them. People really appreciate it. So, Jed, like you said,
videotaping
some bonuses and sending it out to different people.
Yeah.
And, you know, trying to hit up people with as much stuff as we can to give to them.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Joe and I are all about putting together value. You know, we didn't shortcut anything on this. In fact, there was one piece of equipment that I wasn't really happy with how the video turned out. You couldn't really see what we were talking about because it was a piece of equipment that was already put together completely. And you know what? I jerked it out of there because it just seemed like a just didn't seem to add too much value to the video. But the rest of the stuff is great. And not only do we show you how to just build the equipment, we don't just put together and then throw it in the corner and, okay, let's go on to the next piece of equipment. You know, we go over some technique stuff. Because like we said earlier, the mace bell stuff, you're not just like, you don't just pick those things up and do it flawlessly the first time. There's some technique. So we go over some technique on that, show you how to use it. We build a thick bar axle. We showed several ways to use that for deadlifts, for rows, for recline rows. You know, we take it to the extreme. The video is about an hour long, and a lot of people have asked whether or not it comes in a DVD, you know, a physical DVD format. And there is an upgrade to that product. It's on the delivery page once you make the purchase. And you know, basically, we're just asking people to cover the shipping and the manufacturing costs. That's pretty much all there is to it.
That's real cool. And the fact that you guys have been on the line now for an hour and 45 minutes. Oh, Joe came a little late, but Jay, we've been talking for an hour and 45 minutes. Shows that you guys care about value. And I know there's been about 20 to 25 people on the call tonight, so I know they got a lot for showing up tonight. So it's
cool.
Really good.
Awesome.
But yeah, their Homemade Strength TV, guys, if you're watching the webcast, you can buy it right off the page. If you're interested in it, there's a link. And what's the actual URL for that, guys?
That's homemadestrength.com.
There you go, homemadestrength.com. And that's about all I got for you guys tonight. I appreciate you guys coming by and hopping on the call for a little while. We've been on for quite some time now.
Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot for having us, man.
Yeah, I appreciate you letting me on. So sorry I came in late. I was at the old child raising classes with the wife.
Lamaze class.
So no, Lamaze class is tomorrow. We got all these classes. So I got out of that at about 8:30. You know, booked it home and got on the call as fast as I could. And I really appreciate the opportunity. You guys, patience.
Hey Joe, when my classes are ready to come up, dude, will you go for me?
Just gotta take your place.
Yeah, can you just like sit in for me, dude, and wear the Jed Johnson mask or something?
I'll videotape the ones I'm at, and you can just play them at home versions.
Yeah. Do that.
Product.
Yeah, dude. Exactly, dude. I love the way you think, man. I love the way you think. Hey,
you gotta maximize your time.
Yep. Hey, Ryan, I just want to throw out there that if people want to, if they ever have a question on anything, feel free to like email me. Just go to dieselcrew.com and go to the contact bar and just hit me up on my email address. I always welcome questions on grip strength, and I just want to put one quick plug out there if I can. Grip is a growing sport, and I would be glad to share any kind of information that I can with people on how to get into that sport and help keep it growing. Also, if anybody's interested in sponsoring a contest, let me know, and we always try to take care of our sponsors as much as we can.
Good stuff.
And I got one more thing, too. I'm going to put Jed on the spot. Jed, are you coming out to train Saturday or what?
On Saturday in the morning, I just don't know. I've got my volunteerism that day.
Oh, all right.
Going to be my company does an Earth Day commitment, and we pick stuff up off the road on Earth Day, and then we also do it again 6 months later. So it's
gotta
been
get community service done.
Yeah, I got to get my community service in there, brother. So it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough.
All right. Those Iron Sheik wrestling moves, you got to watch out for.
Yeah. Yeah, dude. Everyone's probably got to mix in some Sheik.
But, Joe, give your site. Where can everybody find your stuff at besides Homemade Strength?
Yeah, my site's synergy-athletics.com. It's a strength training blog. I put up as much information as I can. I have links to Homemade Strength up there, and I'll have links to my manual, Bull Strength, over at bullstrength.com as well. But I just run off that page. I'll try to make as many posts as I can a week. You know, I was good for the first like 300 days. I made one post a day, every single day. Now I get about five in a week. Cause not enough people. I think it was like a content overload. So I get about five posts up a week there, and some great. I've been getting a lot of comments lately. Just like Jed said, you know, we're really open to questions, suggestions. You can just post a comment, and my posts ask questions, or my emails on most of the posts. You know, I'm not hiding, so feel free to hit me up with whatever you have. I appreciate it, guys.
Yeah.
Good stuff, man. Thanks a lot, guys, for joining. And once again, this is Ryan McGinn with MuscleGainingExperts.com with Jed and Joe. Thanks a lot, guys, for being online.
Yeah,
talk to you guys later.
Yep.
All right, take care, everyone. Bye.